Now I'd like to introduce tonight's guest speaker, Susan Akers Pink, who is a certified hospice and palliative care nurse. She's been caring for dying patients and their families since 1995. She's been practicing meditation for 9 years, and she's taught compassionate care of dying workshops for IMCW. And Susan, welcome.
Thank you. So, welcome. I'm so glad all of you are here tonight, and I thank Tara for giving me this time with you. It's a beautiful night, and for all of you to be here indoors, thank you for that, too. I woke up this morning and opened my sliding glass door to my back porch, and it was like, wow, this is a beautiful day. My talk tonight is on compassionate presence, care of the vulnerable. And when I decided to do this talk, little did I know how much of my own vulnerability was going to come to the surface. I was talking to my youngest daughter about this talk. I was preparing for it. And I have to admit, there was some angst about it and some fear. And I was telling her, you know, and trying to talk it through with her. And at one point she said, well, you know, Mom, you're the one that decided to talk about this. I was like, yeah, I did. So here we are. So tonight I'm going to talk about what is vulnerability? What does it mean? And who is vulnerable? And the ways that we avoid our vulnerability, and ultimately we avoid the vulnerability of others. And what are the signs? How do we know that we are avoiding our vulnerabilities? And then I'll show you the way to find that out. And it's through the skillful means of presence, mindfulness, the skillful means of paying attention, awareness, conscious choice to investigate what's happening, and a commitment to continue that exploration. The goal of this is to find out that in order to care for others, we need to care for ourselves. In order to care for ourselves, we need to love ourselves. Not sure why that sounds so hard, but it can be hard, can it? Yeah. I can't teach about vulnerability if I don't share with you my own vulnerable stories. I'll do some of my own storytelling, and then I'll ask you all, maybe, if not to tell long stories, but maybe some reflections of your own about who is vulnerable, what does it mean, how you might avoid it. Just some brief reflections. I entered my freshman year of college in 1970, another vulnerable space, because I don't want to tell you that age, because then you're figuring out how old I am. But it was in 1970, I entered the University of Georgia as a freshman. And I was enjoying my first year. I had come home for Christmas, celebrated it with my family who happened to live here in Rockville. And I went back that January. And I'd only been back for a couple of weeks. I lived in a dorm of about 1,000 women. It was the days when there weren't a lot of co-ed dorms. Things were pretty secure, and things were locked up early at night until late in the morning, it seemed like. But I got a phone call early one morning. It was about 7 o'clock in the morning from the lobby desk. 7 o'clock in the morning, I get a call that I have a visitor. And it's a neighbor of mine, an old family friend when we lived in Atlanta, who was down in the lobby. And I thought, well, that doesn't make sense. Why is Jack here? And my first thought was that it was something to do with my father, because my father had already had, at a young age, a heart attack. So I was thinking that my father had died. or something terrible had happened to him. So I went downstairs, and I remember being the only ones in the lobby, and I sat next to Jack. And it breaks my heart to this day, he told me that my brother had killed himself. He was 21 years old. It was a tragedy in our family. It numbed me when I heard the news. What do you say? You know? I went upstairs. Jack was waiting in the car with his wife. And I had to go and pack my bags immediately and leave to come home. When I began to prep for this talk, I thought, I don't want to tell that story. I don't want to share that. That's a vulnerable thing, and that's something that will expose me, that will expose my vulnerability, my vulnerabilities, my grief, and my sadness. So what is vulnerability? You know, vulnerability is being susceptible to wounding, being open to pain. I read a definition of it by two nurses on rethinking vulnerability in the book Care of the Vulnerable. And they stated that vulnerability implies being at risk for change, change that is usually considered negative, and driven by threat or inadequate resource. The medical definition of vulnerability: capable of being hurt, susceptible to injury or disease, capable of being hurt, physically or emotionally wounded. It's no wonder nobody wants to be with their vulnerability, you know? Why wouldn't we all want to run away from it? Nobody wants to stay in a room with that. Who is vulnerable? I was certainly vulnerable that day as I sat and heard the news of my brother's death. And continued to be vulnerable for many years from that tremendous loss. But who is vulnerable? Dr. Harvey Kochanoff states, he's a palliative care end-of-life physician in Canada, vulnerability is not merely an experience of the unfortunate few, but rather a universal condition and part of our collective humanity. Part of our collective humanity. It's global. We're all vulnerable. So when I say that the topic of my talk is care of the vulnerable, that's every one of us. Care of the vulnerable. How do you do it? How do you not run away? How do you not bury all of that negative wounding? Yeah. Sounds pretty grim. I'd like to just do a reflection, if everybody can just close their eyes for a moment. Put your feet on the floor. Close your eyes. And just a brief reflection. And I want you to ask yourself, and for the purposes of this evening, when you're thinking of vulnerability, you might want to go just to a gentler space, a gentler state of being. Because some vulnerabilities can be traumatic. But I want you to ask yourself, not ask yourself, but say to yourself, I feel vulnerable when? And complete this sentence. Now, I'll give you an example from my own experience here. I feel vulnerable with these bright lights shining on me. I feel exposed. So bring that within yourself and just say, I feel vulnerable when. I feel vulnerable when. I feel vulnerable when. I feel vulnerable when. Can you open your eyes? And I wonder if just a couple of you, a few of you could just briefly, if you feel like you can, maybe share. Because remember, it's care of the vulnerable, and we're all here to care for each other.
I was very vulnerable in my choice of standing in front of the Chinese embassy for many years. And I was overwhelmed by what happened with the Chinese people, the government being so angry with me and sending the police, the Secret Service, although they gave me donuts and coffee and kissed me on the cheek. Then I didn't feel so vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But it was important, okay. So, but it was vulnerable, very.
Thank you.
I was going to say, I feel vulnerable whenever something happens that makes me feel not good enough, like I'm not what I should be in all kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So what I'm hearing is, did everyone hear the different vulnerabilities? Another one? We could do this all night. Maybe just two more.
This surprised me because I'm a touchy-touchy, feely-feely person, but I always feel vulnerable when people touch me.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing, and I think there are a lot of different vulnerabilities that I heard about job loss, loss of a relationship, the loss and pain in the country, unworthiness. And I think everybody in this room has experienced some of those in some way, some fashion. You know. It's hard to stay with it. It's hard to stay with the vulnerabilities. We tend to want to avoid them. You know, the thought that comes to mind, we want to avoid them like the plague, you know. Lord, we don't want to be vulnerable. From everyday vulnerabilities to major tragedy in lives. You know, we want to resist the changes that happen in life, but they're always happening, you know. And we become very skillful at avoiding our suffering and our vulnerabilities. When my brother died, a week after his funeral, I packed up my bags and I went back to school. And not only did I pack up my bags, I packed up my feelings. I packed up my grief and I put it away. And I became silent. It was a silent grief. And I remained silent for many, many years. And when I say silent, I mean that when a friend or somebody new that I had just met would ask me about my family, they would ask me, you know, the normal, how many brothers and sisters do you have? I would say I had one brother. I had two brothers. I didn't want to share that. My silence was protecting my shame. I hid behind a lie, basically, that he didn't exist. I shut my door. I talked about him on a superficial level with my own family or people that knew. But most of the time, no one knew. We avoid our vulnerabilities. We find a lot of ways to do it. It doesn't have to be years and years of silence and shame. It can be as simple as getting on the internet, checking our email. I do it, and we all do it, you know. It's just like, oh boy, I'm not feeling really good. I'm really irritable. I think I'll go check Facebook, you know? It's got to be something better there, you know? My old standby is to go on YouTube and find an old Ellen DeGeneres show, you know? They're great, just little segments, you know, brighten the day. You know, we seek out ways to hide. We seek out ways to avoid. Silence was one of mine. There are a number of other ways. I was talking with a good friend of mine, known her for probably 55 years, and she's a nurse as well, a very seasoned nurse. And so we were discussing my prep for this talk. You can see that I was talking to everybody about it because I was feeling so vulnerable about doing this talk. But it was healthy. It was good. But in that talk, we were sharing that in the U.S. history, it's built on autonomy. It's built on independence and individualism. But it's misinterpreted Because we want to be autonomous. We want to be independent. But we read that as, I can't be weak. I cannot be weak. I have to project an image. And that image has to be a strong one. I can't show any vulnerability. I can't show my suffering, and I certainly can't talk about it. Because what will people think? They will see me as being unworthy, small, nobody. You know, Tara talks about it so beautifully, and I love her description of the space suit self. We hide behind an armor. You know, the antonym for being vulnerable is to armor ourselves, to shield ourselves, to close down, to be small. And we do it every day in little ways. You know, we jump on the internet. I keep going to that, but I think that's a real classic. We get on the phone. Maybe we could just take a few minutes to reflect again, if you all could just close your eyes for a moment. And just sort of, if you can just sit there and reflect on your own experience. Pick one of the vulnerabilities that you felt just a few minutes ago. And tell me a way you avoid your vulnerability. And just think this to yourself, if you will. I avoid my vulnerability when I... I avoid my vulnerability when I... I avoid my vulnerability when I... And I want to, keeping your eyes closed as you think of your avoidance, please keep in mind that this is not a way to judge yourself. This is a universal condition, a universal way that we armor ourselves. We are all vulnerable, and we all avoid our vulnerability. If you can open your eyes. Can I have a few volunteers to share with how you might avoid your vulnerability?
Just the comment that only women were giving their vulnerabilities, and I think men think it's not masculine to share their vulnerabilities.
So when I tell a story about another time I was vulnerable to avoid talking about how I'm vulnerable now. That's one way I avoid it. And when I make it about you, when I try and deflect away and talk about your vulnerabilities so I can stay out of my own. These are ways I armor myself.
I find that I start to overanalyze or overthink, and it actually ends up being very stressful, but that's what I tend to do.
Thank you. I can avoid vulnerability by getting angry over something really stupid.
I feel vulnerable when I let somebody know how much I love them. I feel very vulnerable.
When I'm in the city, I just find that people don't interact with each other, and they just look at the ground and don't talk to each other. And just listen to their iPhones. So anyone who is willing to be vulnerable or meet people, talk to people, I don't know who they would talk to. It seems like those who are vulnerable are also afraid, and or people are afraid and they're mistaking it for vulnerability. So maybe we could talk about how fear and vulnerability also work together. Mm-hmm. And if you are feeling vulnerable, as I do sometimes in the morning, like, you know, you wake up and you think about all the stuff you have ahead of you, and there's ways that you can deal with that by just calling in light and truth into your life and connecting with your real self, you know, and then all of that just dissipates.
I think for me, I put on this face that I'm happy all the time, and I'm not happy all the time, but I don't want to disappoint people who expect me to be happy.
Thank you. So we project an image. We do that space suit self. You know, we put this armor on. You know, you pretend it's that need to be perfect. I can't be weak. You know. You know, and on everyday vulnerable spaces and things that happen, you can tolerate that up to a certain extent. But it takes a toll on the spirit, and it takes its toll on the spirit and your soul by projecting this image. It takes a constant source of energy to keep it away, to bury it. You know, life is full of vulnerability. But it consumes our energy. It just consumes our energy, and we don't even know it. The same friend I was telling you about, who was a nurse and had been a nurse for many years, she, a couple of years ago, was caring for her elderly parents. And she was one of the primary caregivers. Her brothers and sisters were involved, but she was the primary. Her husband had a lot of other family issues of his own for his own family and wasn't able to help support her. She was the POA, so she needed to be able, the power of attorney, so she was the one that needed to be making decisions. She was working full-time and on her nursing dissertation while she was caring for her elderly parents. Now, she projected an image that she was doing okay because she didn't know where to turn. Here she was in the midst in the nursing field, and she was so exhausted and so consumed by this whole state of being vulnerable in trying to care for them, that she reached the point where she didn't know where to turn. She didn't know where to turn. What do you do? Now, there are support systems and there are ways to do that, but there was an inner spirit in her. There was something inside of her that was toiling with all of this. She could identify the signs: irritable, hungry, dehydrated. She was going through it all. She wasn't sure what to do about it. As you heard at the beginning, I've been a nurse, a hospice nurse, for about 16, 17 years, caring for the dying. And I'd been the home care nurse in hospice in Arlington for about 8 or 10 years when I attended a workshop that was presented by Frank Ostaseski at the Mehta Institute. And I just happened to have this weekend free, and I heard about this caregiving of the dying workshop, and not knowing really what it was about, I thought, well, I'll go, I'll see what it's all about. I had been a hospice nurse. I had been entering the homes of patients who obviously were suffering and quite vulnerable, their patients and caregivers. And very skillful, clinically skillful. And I thought I had all the answers. I thought I was being fully present, and I thought I was being, you know, a wonderful caregiver. That workshop transformed my life because I realized that I could not practice my nursing the way I'd been doing it. The Mehta Institute teaches the psycho-spiritual dimensions of dying to professional caregivers. And I decided after that workshop that I was drawn to going out to San Francisco once a month for 9 months to take this course. I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't know how I was going to work and do it at the same time. But I knew that it was a call that I needed to follow. So I went once a month, juggled my job, and made it out there, and did a couple of retreats while I was there. And Mehta taught me about how you go towards your vulnerabilities. Not in the way I thought they would. One of the assignments before we went was to bring a picture of someone who died in your family. So before I left home, I put a picture of my brother together, took it to San Francisco. And on the first night of one of our retreats, we were asked to put the picture of the person we brought, who had died, who meant so much to us, on an altar. And we had to get up and describe why we had this picture, why we had brought this person with us, because it wasn't just a picture. Yeah. I remember standing up and saying I wanted to throw the picture across the room. But I put it on the altar. I exposed myself. Well, we were all staying in this retreat center. So I went upstairs that night. And I lay in bed and I thought, what have you done? What have you done? You have exposed yourself. You have broken your silence. Everyone's going to know your shame. You have brought it out in the open. And I thought, go down and get that picture. I struggled with that. I really wanted to go down and get it. But I didn't. Herbie's picture remained on the altar the entire time. It wasn't easy. It's not easy. It's hard work. But care of the vulnerable. Care of yourself. Love yourself. This is a way I could care for myself in order to care for others. How could I sit in a room with someone who's dying, who has suffered through their life, through their own losses? How could I stay if I couldn't stay with my own and I couldn't talk about my own? It would not have been real. It would not be genuine. It would not be the truth. So I spoke my truth there. And how did we do it? How do you do it? You begin to embrace your own vulnerabilities through mindfulness. Paying attention to what's happening in the moment. paying attention, being aware. As I stood there, or as I laid there that night thinking about that picture, I could feel my tension, I could feel my sadness, I could feel the way I wanted to hide. I feel the way I wanted to run. I was paying attention to what was happening in the moment, and I was aware of it. I didn't have to like it. None of us have to like it. Because many a times we don't. Just pay attention. Be with it. Accept what's happening. When I would go into a patient's home to see them, I stopped asking, "How are you?" Nobody wants to answer that, you know? And you don't get the truth. Because it goes back to projecting that image. Nobody wants to be weak. So when they ask you, "How are you?" everybody says, "I'm fine." And they're not. Everybody says, "I'm good, good." My daughter, when I was prepping for this talk, and you can tell another person I talked to about this, my other daughter, I said to her, she said, "Oh," she called me from California. She said, "How's it going with your talk?" I said, "Oh, fine." Fine. She said, "Oh, you're not worried?" I said, No, I'm not worried. I'm scared to death." And she laughed and she said, "Well, there's the truth. There's the truth. What's happening?" So when I'd go in to see a patient, I'd say, "What's happening? What's happening?" One, you really want to know. Ask yourself, what's happening? And then there's a conscious choice to investigate what's happening. A conscious choice to stay with it. A conscious choice to ask more questions. You know, how come this hurts? Where is my pain? I didn't stay with it yesterday. Can I stay with it today? Who can help me? Ask, investigate, but a conscious choice to do that. And a commitment to explore. A commitment to explore. Because the vulnerabilities are always going to be there. They're not going away. That would be nice. Fine. That would be fine. See, I went to Metta and I came back and I began to work with patients. I love my work. I love being at the bedside. But it's not easy. I remember one patient I saw was a young woman who was dying of melanoma. She had young children. And she was so afraid. And her fear and her vulnerability came out as high anxiety to the point where nobody wanted to be in the room with her. You know? I remember even her young son said, "Why does it have to be so hard for you?" You know? Even the hospice staff didn't want to be with her. She went through different people because it was just incredibly difficult. Her fear turned into anxiety. And I remember saying, "Well, I'll see her." And I remember entering the room, very tiny upstairs bedroom, crowded. She had a couple of clinical things that needed to be taken care of. And her anxiety, I could feel it in my own body. And it escalated. And she talked and talked and talked and more. And I had to pause. Because that's what we do. We pause. And we pay attention. And I could feel my face getting flushed. And I just said to her, if you can just give me a minute, I'll be able to hear what you're saying. And I looked out the window just to pause, to center myself. And I stayed. It wasn't easy. She was not an easy person to always be with. But as time went on, she softened. Her vulnerabilities didn't go away. Her fear didn't really go away. But I was there to hold it for her. I was there to create the space for her to be with her own fear. Make it a conscious choice to stay. Stay with your own feelings. And they're always right here in your body. That's how they come. Your body's always in the present moment. About a year or so after I completed the MEDA program, I lost my father. I remember a few days before his life ended, coming into the house and seeing him, and here I am, you know, a nurse, and I saw him, and I thought, I don't know what to do. What am I supposed to do? I really didn't know what to do because it got so tense and so fearful. It always comes out in some fashion. Old fears, cellular level. And after my dad died, I started to do some work. And I call it kind of the visceral vulnerability. It was coming out in abdominal pain, cramping, whenever I would get myself into a situation where it was fearful. What do? You know? I did have the good fortune of being with a therapist that did somatic experiencing therapy and was able to work through it because you go towards it. But you go towards it with loving presence. You go towards your pain and suffering with kindness. But you go towards it. You got to go through it. I grew up down in Norfolk, and I remember my girlfriend telling me one time her dad, she was questioning why they take the big ships, you know, in the naval shipyard there, out to sea when a storm comes. They don't leave them at the docks. There's not enough space. They go into the storm. They go out into the ocean. They go out into the ocean where there's plenty of room. So as I began to do this work of going inward, going deeper, I created more space. It softened. You know, you think, oh, good, it's softened and they're all gone. No. The vulnerabilities are our teachers. Our vulnerabilities teach us over and over and over and over and over again. There is no end to it. It's a spiral. And if we're willing to go deeper and deeper, we find the truth. If we're willing to embrace our pain and suffering, we embrace it through the skillful means of mindfulness and compassion, through kindness, through loving kindness for ourselves.
So in preparing for this talk, I have to tell you, it was hard. You know, if I heard the word vulnerability one more time, I was going to scream. You know, it's sort of like, oh, it's here again, it's here again. So every time that I felt threatened, every time I felt fearful, I sat on my cushion. I kept coming back to my cushion. There were times when I would sit and my whole body would become tense. But I always would find one soft spot. And I focused my heart on the soft spot until it grew bigger and opened up, and there created more and more space and more and more space. So one day last week, I was sitting and the thing that came to my mind was Herbie's letters. Now, about 9 months ago, I was preparing to move, sell my house and move. And I came across a bag full of letters that I didn't know I had. And I found 6 letters that Herbie wrote me my freshman year at the University of Georgia. I found them in an old grocery bag. And I remember back in the fall, I sat and just opened each one and read them. But I didn't let myself go there. And I put them away, and I put them in a small firebox I have for important papers, and pushed it under my bed. But when I sat on the cushion down at my new home, I remembered the letters. I think you're supposed to read those letters. Well, I live on a lake right now, so I took the letters and I went and sat on a chair right by the water by myself, and I opened his letters. And I cried. I really cried. But it wasn't tears of tragedy. It was tears of love. Unconditional love that came through those letters that I didn't even know I had. What a gift. I'd come full circle. Started the letters. You know, he was my older brother, baby sister, sweet patootie. I was down at Georgia, peaches, he called me. You know, sweet, huh? Sweet Susie Q. I had no idea they were there, you know? When I was preparing for this talk, I was having so much angst because I kept going to all my spiritual books looking for readings to share with you. I thought there've got to be some teachers out there that could help me with this. But it was a crutch. It was a crutch to use other people's readings. It was a way for me to hide behind my own fear of being vulnerable here tonight. You know, we have crutches for our wounds. My teacher is my vulnerabilities. I did not need other readings. The only reading I needed were Herbie's letters. I'm not going to read them all to you, but I'm going to read a couple of lines. Baby sister, it was really super to read your letters, which arrived today. I can tell from the mood of your writing that you're really digging, being on your own, doing your own thinking, and being responsible for and answerable only to yourself. If you think you've had fun the past week or so, just wait till you know just about everybody and where everything is located on campus, and just what is expected of a beautiful college co-ed of the Aquarian age. He signed off one letter, got a split. Stay sweet as ever. Have fun. Write when you can. Love, Herbie. Another closing. Your letters sound really good. You must be real happy down there, because if not, it would show in your letters. I'm real glad you're doing so well. Sweet Susie Q, how are you, co-ed of the century? And a closing. There's a whole ton of stuff I'd like to rap about, but you'll be here before long. So I'll say goodbye until we meet again. Love, Herbie. I really felt I'd come full circle. You know? Beautiful. If you leave with one thing here tonight, I hope it's that you love yourself. That when you feel these vulnerable places come up, call yourself Sweet Patootie. You know, love yourself. And then take that love when you're ready and care for the vulnerable. Because we're all vulnerable. And someday you may be caring for someone who's dying, who's ill, someone who's aging, and you'll be able to stay. I have to share one teacher. One of my favorite teachers is Ram Dass. And I have to share this because it came in the mail today. So I think I'm going to close tonight with this reading from Ram Dass. Seem fitting. Each of us is separate, and yet each of us is part of the whole. But sometimes we get lost a little bit in dualism, and then we find our way back out. Every time we are in the presence of unconditional love, we remember. And when we remember, we open. And when we open, the light pours through us. If you become a person who could love unconditionally, everybody would flower before your very eyes. And everywhere you look, there would be light. It would be breathtaking at every level. So just for a few minutes, let's just close our eyes. Settle. And as we close this evening, care of the vulnerable. Embrace yourself with kindness. And compassion. Care of the vulnerable. Care of yourself. Namaste.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.